Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and each week we explore the conversations that matter to your mental, emotional and social well-being. Today's guest has dedicated her life to guiding parents through one of life's most emotional transitions, watching their children grow up and move on. Pilar Kellingberger is an author, educator, and mother whose books Parenting Scholar Athletes and Becoming an Empty Nester have touched countless hearts. Through her writing, courses, and videos, she helps parents raise capable, independent children. And then, when the house grows quiet, she helps them rediscover themselves. Many of us spend years preparing our children to fly, but few of us prepare ourselves for the silence that follows. Pilar's work reminds us that this new chapter is not the end of purpose or love. It's the beginning of rediscovery, joy, and peace. Pilar, it's such a pleasure to have you here. Let's begin with your own journey. What inspired you to write Becoming an Empty Nester?
Hi, Dr. Walia. Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting. And what inspired me to write Becoming an Empty Nester is that I think it's the next spot or the next approach to what I was doing. I was writing a book and sharing my knowledge and my experience of raising student athletes. But then how do I let go of them? How do I live without them when they go to college? And that was the next journey. So because that was on my journey, I thought, well, if I'm helping moms raise their students, let me help them, you know, become empty nesters like I was doing.
Thank you for sharing that. And it's not an easy transition at all. I mean, there's been many a conversation I've had with parents where they've actually really struggled with that. And although I'm not a parent myself, but I know when my nephew and even my niece were leaving to go to university, and I don't even live with them, I was crying at the prospect of them moving on. It's a challenging time for many, sadly, and it's such a natural next step, isn't it, to a journey. And you were already guiding parents through one of the most intense, purpose-filled stages of life. Now you're helping them navigate what comes after. So many parent carers talk about a mix of pride and loss when children move out. How did you navigate that emotional duality?
Well, with that, I became really more aware of how I was feeling. That the big thing was in my spiritual learnings and things that I was listening to, it was more about, let's become aware of what I'm feeling and what I'm doing, and then why am I feeling that way? So when they were leaving and I was becoming, how do I go from loss to pride, I did start to think back and made a practice of reflecting on what was going to be my outcome. What did I always see in my life? Like, one small thing was in my house, I'm still in the same house that when I had my children. So I've been here for 34 years and my staircase wall was always empty. So I remember thinking, oh, every winter, Christmas time, I will have a picture of the girls as they progress. Oh, wouldn't that be great? And I kept thinking that was going to take years to fill. And now it's filled. And then it also has wedding pictures, but it also has all the graduation pictures. And then now it's not four of us, it's six of us. So I have this walk every night of, oh my gosh, how did that wall get filled so quickly? But I like to tell people to reflect on what were your outcomes in your mind and then enjoy them. My daughters did everything that they wanted to do and I'm happy for them. And I think that's one of the things is you have to be on board with what are they doing and just support them.
And that's such a touching reflection. It shows how deeply your surroundings mirror your journey. And that staircase wall almost tells your family story through time, from
Oh my
childhood
gosh, yes,
to
yes.
adulthood. That's lovely. And the milestones that they've reached is beautiful. I love how your staircase wall became a living timeline of your family's journey and how it's extending. And your book also shares 50 ways to embrace this stage of life. What are a few that personally helped you reconnect with yourself? Even though you have the memorabilia there, you've taken pride and honored those memories. What else is it that you would recommend to our listeners?
Well, the ones that really helped me, started me to reconnect with myself. It's not like in the book, okay, it's the first one, second one, third idea. What happened was, it's basically just, what are my favorite things? And I sat down and I made myself write down a list of what were my favorite things that I liked doing before I had children. And when I was pushing them in the stroller or pram, right, in the UK. And what was it like? What did I want to do? Well, yeah, we always want to be with our children, but sometimes we would want a break and, oh, I'd like to sit on the beach and just go for a walk whenever I wanted to. You know, having hands on and eyes on someone 24/7, it's a hard job. And then what else did I want to do? Oh, maybe go to museums, maybe just take a drive on the coast, things like that. Or even the simple things of, I love riding a bike since a child. So then I did that. And then another idea that I have in the book is visiting places that I kept putting off. Well, I kept putting off going to Balboa Park on my own. I've done it with, you know, field trips with the children. But to go on yourself, go have lunch, enjoy Balboa Park, the atrium, the little pond with the lily pads, and just enjoying myself and just going into a museum and letting my mind just take me and look and learn. So I remember being there, and because I went on a time when I think it's every third Thursday of the month, it's free admittance. So I went that day, and it was so neat because there were so many children having field trips there. And it was just so fun to, oh, I remember being the mom or the parent or the teacher taking, you know, the children to on a field trip to a museum. And it just brought back really good memories. But then it was nice to just be on my own and just enjoy the day. So those would be like my two favorite things that people should do to get over all of that.
And I love that. It's such a powerful reminder that rediscovering ourselves doesn't have to mean reinventing everything. It's often about returning to the little joys we once had, but put aside for our children or the children we took care of. And you spoke of, is it Balboa Park? Is that?
Yes.
Where is that based exactly?
It's because down in San Diego.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in San Diego. Okay.
Yes, down in San Diego, because I'm living in California, north, in a little beach community called Encinitas. So oh, going down to, yes. And Balboa Park is near the zoo that they have there. I remember going to the zoo often. I would purchase the membership with the children, with my girls, and we would go like, I don't know, maybe even two or three times a week. But it was nice because we could go have lunch and go see whatever animals they wanted to see that day and then go home. And so that was kind of fun. They also had a little travel thing in the air that you can take that overlooks the whole park, the whole zoo. And sometimes we would just go down there and just ride that back and forth. If there was nobody there, the gentleman he would say, would you want to just keep going? And we would say yes. And so we would just fly that and hang out and then go have a little lunch and then go home. So it was really fun to have Balboa Park and the zoo right there.
And that sounds so special. Those kinds of memories really stay with you, don't they? It's lovely
oh my
how
God,
the
yeah.
same place that once held your children's laughter has now become somewhere you can enjoy in a different way. And that's just what we're here to talk about. You can still enjoy and treasure those memories, but you can create new ones as well. But going back to your daughters, you raised two scholar athlete daughters while balancing teaching and life's challenges. How did that chapter prepare you for this new one?
I was thinking about this a while ago. How did I do all that? First of all, how did I do all of that? But of course, I was younger, which was always helpful. I think also balancing all that helped me to have my schedule and looking at it and saying, oh, they're gone now. I don't have that on my schedule. What can I put in my schedule for me? So it was also a way of helping me prepare me for this new stage of life, but it was also a way to help me start living my life kind of in a sense where, oh, now what can I do for me? What self-care things do I want to do? What do I just want to do? You know, I don't have to be running here, running there for the children, just basically for work and the things that I want to do. So that was really kind of exciting. That's why I enjoyed presenting the book as in celebration and not, oh, I'm surviving. It was kind of like, oh, my schedule is opening up. What can I put in there for me?
And I think that's brilliant. And I really appreciate you saying and mentioning the shift from their schedule to my schedule. It's such an important mindset change. I think so. And for so long, your life revolves around your children's routines. And when that space opens up, it can feel both strange and freeing at the same time. But there's a lot of people, even when they're taking care of themselves, whether they've been parenting their own children or somebody else's, some parents feel guilt when they start putting themselves first again. How do you help people see self-care as part of a healthy parenting lifestyle?
Yeah, I remember stepping into the empty nest stage. I learned I needed to get back to my doctors. So those are some things that I started putting to myself, like, oh, girl, you've been eating a lot of burgers on the road. You need to get back and be healthy, get those important numbers. And so I started doing that. And then I thought, wow, yeah, I really need to. What else can I do? Then it was like, I had to remember, I'm the only person who's really going to take care of me. I can't rely on my children or my husband or my friends. I have to do it. So that was a really eye-opener. Because then you see, oh, okay, I need to work on this. Okay, let's work on the cholesterol. Let's work on getting more activity. And then those self-help, self-care things started happening to my schedule. Oh, okay, I'm going to get up and I'm going to walk for an hour. Then I'm going to do this and that. So it really helped me. Oh, you should learn some Pilates. You should do this. So the self-care just started happening because I took that first step to go back to my doctor. Let's see the numbers and let's see what we need to work on.
And like you shared, I think that self-care journey, I think while you're on that journey of being a parent carer, you tend to put yourself aside. And I often tell parents and carers that I work with to think about how you would teach your own children to rest when they're tired or to eat when they're hungry. And those lessons of self-care are so important, but it's very important to actually, and we use this analogy so much, so often, so many people do, put the oxygen mask on yourself first and then others.
Yes.
It's so important to do so, because when, as a parent carer, you see or even a child, actually, when a child sees their parent carer is actually taking care of themselves, they are modeling that healthy, what a healthy adult looks like. And it's not about taking time away from them, but it's about showing them how to live with balance and joy when they do move on. Because I think that's so many parent carers, they put these things aside, don't they? And what you've shared is a very empowering perspective. And how does that work with a partnership? Say, for example, are you doing things together, or is it very individually based?
Yes. So, yeah, we kind of found where, oh, we're not driving up to LA or to Vegas or to Phoenix anymore from California for all of the volleyball. So that opened up weekends where we could literally just, let's go grab our beach chairs and go sit at the beach. We live about maybe a 10-minute drive. And then we started being clever and purchasing the beach parking. It's for all the national parks, but it's for the beach parking as well. So we pick a different beach and just go sit and go look. And so it kind of opened up things for us as partners. It's like, oh, hello, who are you? After they leave, it's like, oh yeah, you're living here still. So that's definitely something that you realize, like, oh, we can get back to, like, what are the things we enjoy? Oh, mm-hmm. Let's go. Like recently, I remember stating, oh, they have this beautiful candlelight music of a quartet that plays Beatles music. And I love the Beatles. I loved them since a kid. And he surprised me and bought some tickets, and we went. And it was just so wonderful that we didn't have to find a babysitter, and we didn't have to, you know, schedule it around their schedule. And it was just like, oh, let's go. And we made a night of it. And it was just really, really important that we start doing the date night. A lot of people say, oh yeah, it's important to do a date night, but so many people put it off. And I know we've put it off because it was, how are we going to do it around their schedule? Babysitters cost money, and you know, you don't always have the funds to go out to dinner. But to make it, oh, let's just go for a walk. Let's just go for a drive together. Let's just go do a few errands, but let's go do something fun. Like maybe go get a cup of coffee and relax and just talk about something else besides the children.
And I absolutely think that's beautiful. It's a beautiful reminder that the empty nest stage isn't just about letting go of your children, but also about reconnecting with your partner. And it sounds like you and your husband have found a new rhythm together, almost like rediscovering that friendship and having fun all over again. And those little things, the spontaneous beach days, the music under candlelight, all of that sounds really beautiful and powerful. They're powerful ways to fall in love again with life and maybe even each other.
Right.
Thank you, Pilar. Thank you so much for your insights so far. We are going to take a short break now with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and I'm in conversation with the amazing Pilar Kellenberger. Before the break, we were talking about what inspired you to write your amazing book to help other parent carers cope once their children have grown up and moved on. Let's continue. So becoming an empty nester reframes the experience as a celebration. What helped you make that mindset shift from the sadness to gratitude? Because a lot of people still struggle with that. They still feel that emptiness, really, don't they?
Yes. Like we all in this spiritual learning, we all loved Wayne Dyer. And he taught me that very important idea of what you think of is what you become. And I have always kept that in my mind. So if I'm always going to dwell on the sadness of my girls being gone, then that's just going to be my life. So I've had to make that a daily practice. I'd rather be happy. And so I kept putting this idea to practice every day. And don't get me wrong, I am not somebody who's never cried over their children being gone. I mean, I can really tell you after the years of them being gone and then pandemic hit, they were still back east. And then they ended up wanting, they were both engaged in 2019, but then the pandemic hit and it was like, what's going on with this world? So they all did their elopements with family. So we went to North Carolina for my older daughter's elopement. She got married on the beach on the Day of the Dead, November 1st. And she wore a black dress because she always wanted to do that. And then my other daughter got married a year later in Colorado. But these were still times when you had to, you know, make sure you were vaccinated and this and that. And so we went to Colorado for hers at this very beautiful Garden of the Gods, where she did her elopement with just family. And then they both have just recently done their own weddings. But getting back to the, how did I shift, do my mindset shift from sadness to gratitude? It was like, I was just happy to be part of all that and just, oh, let's just do what they want to do and let's just have fun in that. So I think them also doing their elopements helped us. Oh, we're traveling a little. Let's enjoy life. Let's not be so sad. And these happy moments, I think, helped us continue to be in that space.
And I think it's just sitting in those moments and being very present is what the main shift is, being mindful of that. And you're right, those moments of celebration really do help shift our focus from what's changing to what's continuing. And that love, that connection, that family unit, it's just being grateful and living in that gratitude, in that motion, isn't it? And what advice do you have for parent carers who really do struggle with identity when their role as mum or dad feels like it's fading?
I remember feeling that shift from I'm the mom and this is how you brush your teeth and this is how you do your shoes and this is a way to organize your room and practicing helping them, you know, do things like that. But then it turned into, oh, they're grown, they're in college. So I can't really, you know, I don't want to be the nagging mother. I don't want to be the helicopter parent. So a great realization that happened was when I did write my first book on parenting. So as a parent who went through raising the kids, I could offer things that worked for me. Like, oh, this is what happened. This is what worked for me. Do you want to hear it? And that's one of the important things is becoming a better parent is to offer your opinion or ideas and not just to say them. So what happens is if we're having conversation and they're talking about nutrition or technology or whatever, and I might say, oh, well, I have an idea on this. Do you want to hear it? And they'll say, oh, no, thank you, Mom. But at least I offered it and I'm giving them the moment and the time to say what how they feel. And, you know, if they don't want to hear it, they don't need to hear it. But it's also a way of me to say, hi, I'm still here and I'm available, but without being so protruding. As I look back on that, I say to myself, well, even though they're grown, I don't have to not necessarily discard them, but I don't have to stay away from them. I can still offer what I want and just offer being there and enjoy life. Because if I look back at when I was 30 with children or when I was in my late 20s and starting my life on my own, I can remember, oh, I wanted that parent to maybe chat about, oh, how did you do this? Or what do you think? Or like in such a nice way. So it was nice to know those feelings that I had and to make sure that I can be there for them because I'm sure they have the same feelings.
Yes. And I think it also shows such emotional intelligence when you have that respect and for their independence. And what you've described, and they're learning from that as well. And what you've described is the delicate balance so many parents struggle with, staying connected but not controlling, and being available but not overstepping. And I think that gentle shift from telling to offering is such a profound part of healthy adult relationship, even with our children. It's almost like moving from parent to mentor, and you're still guiding, but with permission and mutual respect. And that's such a beautiful perspective. And I think it really captures the heart of what healthy connection looks like in adulthood. And I mean, for me, what I've witnessed and come across often, there's a real cultural element to parenting. And if even in adulthood, when I say cultural, I've been exposed to the South Asian culture a lot. Mm-hmm. I've been brought up in it, and there's a lot of control elements there. And I find it's not just in the Southeast Asian culture, but it's in many different cultures as well. So what's your perspective on culture? What would you advise certain parents that have that controlling aspect embedded in them, and it's a transgenerational pattern that they seem to carry throughout their life? How would you advise someone to evolve that kind of relationship?
Like, for instance, my parents were brought up in the beginning of boomers, where they would, or the silent era, where my dad would literally say, I remember him saying, you know, when I was a child, we were to be seen but not heard. Yes. And I remember his sister, older sister, always repeating that. And so they brought us up maybe a little differently, but I can remember that feeling of, oh, stay in my lane, stay in my place. You know, there were certain things that I did not say or bring up when people came over. Like, there was all of these different, I guess, cultural things that you didn't do or didn't act. And I just wanted to make sure I didn't do that with my kids when I was raising them. Like, I've learned I needed to put an end to some of them are kind of toxic ways.
Yes.
And I just wanted to make sure I wasn't repeating them. I wanted to, oh, okay, if that's how they were brought up and that's how they were bringing us up, oh no, I'm not doing that. Only also because I can remember the pain of what some of that brought on to me. Mm-hmm. So I was like, ooh, I really don't want to do that. How would I have wanted to be treated when this happened? Like my one daughter coming to me, I remember, I don't know, seventh grade. And, oh, I'm supposed to do this project. And I had 2 or 3 weeks and I didn't do it. And it's due tomorrow. Well, my thing with them was always, I'm not doing your homework. But yeah, this one time, we can sit here with you and support you, but you're going to do the work. And we did that. We were up late. She was putting her little doll together and writing up whatever it was that was for the topic. And then she did learn from that, like, oh yeah, they're really not going to just do it for me. But I also wanted her to know, we have your back. We can be supportive. Mm-hmm. But she also knew she was supposed to do it and she just let it go. It was a learning process. It was a learning time for her. I can remember doing, I don't know, they did this egg thing when I was in sixth grade where you take an egg, a raw egg, and you had to create some kind of, I don't know, some kind of thing to put it in so that it wouldn't break. And they would toss these projects off the roof of the elementary school. Mm-hmm. And then if it opened and it wasn't broken, you know, that was awesome. And I know one of my daughters ended up doing that also here. They did it off of a fireman came and they did it off of their crane. But I remember not doing it because I was not treated very kindly. Like, oh, I have this project. And it was like, you know, just the negativity that came toward me of just even asking for help. And I was like, oh, okay. But I was kind enough. My teacher was kind enough where I could open up to him. He was a first year teacher. And I was like, hey, you know, I don't know, I'm not getting much help to do this. And he's like, you know what? I need a judge. So you are going to be the judge, but you're going to also work with a group and help them, give them ideas, but you're also going to be one of my judges. And I was like, wow, this educator saw my problem. And instead of telling me to, like other people older would say, oh, you know what, just do your job or get over it or whatever. He really saw and could really feel what I was going through and really made it a better outcome for me. It was more positive. So I made sure I did that with my kids. Okay, you need to learn this. Yeah. And I need to be a little, okay, you need to be accountable for your actions, but you also can rely on me for whatever. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I really admire that awareness because it takes a lot of courage to recognize those patterns and consciously choose a different way. And instead of holding on to that negativity, you've actually evolved it into something that would break those unspoken cultural rules, the ones that sometimes limit emotional expression. And that's such a powerful, it's powerful inner work, isn't it? It's almost like you're rewriting the script for the next generation, showing that love and respect can coexist with openness and that individuality. And you've talked about healing from your own family's dysfunction. How has that personal growth influenced the way you parent and now teach others? That mother-daughter bond isn't easy if there's complexities there or there's a toxic relationship there. And it can be especially emotional during separation for some. So how did you and your daughters maintain closeness from afar? And also, what advice would you give to those single parents out there who have got, in particular, I'm focusing on mothers and daughter relationships, if there's not that bond that they desire, how would you say they can develop that? What can you advise mothers and even daughters to help them cope? So let's start with you. Let's start with, how did you and your daughters maintain the closeness from afar?
Oh, that's a great question. I made sure to connect. I think connection was the thing. I remember telling my husband that, although, because I could see him struggling, because I was struggling. So I said, hey, because he always went surfing with the younger. When she was 11, she started going with him to this group of guys who would surf down in a place called Tourmaline. It's a popular surf area down in San Diego. And she would go, and because she was this great baker, she loved baking. At that age, she knew when she grew up, she was going to own her own bakery. She knew the name and everything. So she would go, and then she would bake chocolate chip cookies. So every Saturday night, she would be baking, putting them in her little container. They would be getting their all their things ready to go down and surf. And I told my husband, you had that connection with her. Now use the surfing connection that you have with her. So I connected also was, I knew the baker loved baking. So when she was in college, her master's year, she was not on in a dorm. She was with a bunch of girls in a house. So they had to cook their own meals. So then I got this container, like a little Tupperware container.
Yeah.
And I, because that's what I would use here to put flour in. So I got the same one that I had, and I put a picture of me and her on it baking, because every Thanksgiving we bake pumpkin pie and apple pie. She does not eat pumpkin pie, but she loves to bake it. So we would always, you know, with the older phones, we would take pictures of each other. And I think the one that I actually used was very grainy, but I put the picture on the container, and then I put a bunch of things in the container for her, and I shipped it to her. Well, now that she's here, she's married, she lives 40 minutes away. I remember being down there just recently and seeing that container and being like, oh my gosh, like she still has it. So I try to connect. I always try to connect with her with that, and sending them each, because my other daughter, when she became a student for her master's, she also found an apartment with other archaeologists, and they all, you know, lived together. So I would send her, she wasn't much of the baker cooker, but I did send her, like, you know, towels, and she loved Halloween. So I would always, you know, year round, so I'd find a skeleton here or there and send it to her. But she's also the archaeologist. So I still try to connect with her by, when she tells me, oh, mom, I'm going to be on this podcast, or I'm speaking this, or I'm doing a live on my Instagram, I always show up. I try to make sure I show up and I'm there. And because I'm also learning what it is that she's doing and what is really important to her. So I think even with a single mother-daughter, I would think that that bond is probably even closer, because you have each other. I know I have a friend who was a single parent with a daughter. And when her daughter graduated and was going to college and was going to go up north, it was very hard on her, because she said, you know, like, you have your husband, you have your other daughter. I don't really have that. And I thought, wow, I didn't even really think about that until I started living and thinking, like, as if I was in her shoes. But I think the same thing could work, is just trying to, what interests do they have, and what part of that interest can you connect with? I think that's what I would tell the moms and parents to do, to really just find a connection.
And that's so important. And the reason why I mentioned the mother-daughter relationship, just to clarify to our audience, is because of your actual contents of your book and how you talk about your experiences. And I really appreciate how you're sharing that. I think that's such a powerful takeaway as well. It's really about finding connection in new ways, isn't it? It's even when the roles change, the love doesn't, and it just transforms. And what you've shared today really shows that being an empty nester isn't about loss. It's about rediscovery, reconnection, and continuing to love with presence rather than proximity. And thank you so much for your wise words, Pillar. We'll continue this inspiring conversation in just a moment, but let's pause for another word from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Healthy Debate Show with me, Belinda Walia, on UK Health Radio. And I'm in conversation with Pillar Killenberger, author of Becoming an Empty Nester. Many parents feel pressure to constantly do more. What would you say to those who struggle to slow down and just be?
I feel that a lot because like many empty nesters, I feel like I'm still in my 30s and 40s when I'm 60. But by putting me first, I practice living in the now. So I feel like that helped slow me down where I'm not trying to do. I'm trying to do things that I enjoy. And the writing came into that.
Yeah,
I enjoy sharing my experiences. I enjoy helping others. So that, even though writing is a hard process, and you know yourself, but it also helped me to do things that I enjoyed, but also to, you know, again, reflect after all we've achieved with our children. We raise them, we launch them, and then it's our time to really just enjoy this special moment that we worked hard toward. Because I think all parents have that, okay, this is where we start, and then what does the ending look like in your mind? It's a little fuzzy for all of us, but I know we all have that. And then to just really remind ourselves, you've done your job, and now you need to just enjoy and not really change in a way where you have to be away from them, but start connecting, start reaching out, but start doing things that you like. And it just seemed to help me slow down. And to, oh, I'm going to focus on my more research. Oh, I'm going to focus on this. And then it would help me. And then it would also, like they say, when you write a book, you're really writing it for yourself. And it's so true. I was really, if I look back, these books I was writing for me. And I'm just like grateful for that. I really, because I learned so much when I was writing, like, oh, I have to add this. Oh, I did that. Oh, that's so awesome. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so really connecting and doing that.
And finally, Pilar, what's your message to everyone today? Parents listening who are feeling that ache of letting go, and what's on the other side of this transition?
I would tell them that really look into what letting go is versus what they think it is. Because I used to think, why am I not letting this go? Why am I? And it was because I learned through Matt Kahn that you don't let go of things. They let go of you. So I know we all have the experience of a situation in our lives where we cry, for instance. And we all know that when we cry, when we're done crying at that moment, we feel better. So finally, it's so simple, but to just connect with that, like, oh, if I sit in the feeling and I feel it, if I have to cry, I can cry. If I want to chuckle and laugh about memories I have, I'll do that. But to let them be seen, really. So I would say, don't try to shove it down. Don't try to shove your feelings down into your body with food or alcohol or just pushing it away. Let them be there. Welcome them. Have that feeling of, yeah, this is what I'm going to feel. It's not wrong. And we all do it differently. But once you embrace it, to me, I felt like it started to go. It started letting go of me. That's what I would have people really look into. What is it that you want to let go? And then let feet sit in it, and then it will go when it's ready.
Yeah, and it's such a compassionate reminder that our feelings don't need to be fixed or hidden. They just need to be acknowledged, and acknowledged by you. And thank you so much for sharing your insight, honesty, and warmth. Your message reminds us that love doesn't end when our children leave home. It simply changes shape. And in that change, we rediscover who we are and what brings us joy. If our listeners like to learn more, where can they find you, Pilar?
Oh, they can find me at, I'm on all the Instagram. I do TikTok. And I also have my YouTube, and they're all in my name, Pilar Kellenbarger. I also have I do write blogs. Empty nesters, like, for instance, now we're moving into that holiday season. How are you going to deal with that? There's plenty of videos I have on my YouTube and Instagram, TikTok, that tell you how these are some ways of that I used and what I experienced. So I hope that they can find me there. Just use my name.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. I'm Belinda Walia, and you've been listening to The Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio, where every voice matters and every story heals. Until next time, take care of your mind, body, and heart. And to close today's show, here's a little something upbeat to lift your spirits, Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves. Because sometimes rediscovering yourself starts with turning up the music and remembering how to dance again.